You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. Well, it was none other than William Shakespeare himself who kind of wrote the words, "What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet." My guest today, name is an interesting thing with him. Noel Stuckey is my guest. And if that isn't a name that you recognize, maybe you know him as Paul Stuckey.
Yes, and who's glad he used underarm deodorant if he's going to carry out that thrilling Shakespeare quote to the T.
And if you're still not with us on that, how about if I put him with the people you probably know him best with, and that's Peter, Paul, and Mary. And with me now in the studio, Noel Paul Stuckey.
Well, I heard that a little bit of a setup with Puff the Magic Dragon, so they're probably not too surprised.
All right, there you go. So how did the Paul thing happen?
Was that or the Willows? I mean, we were all relatively tall folks, and our manager said, well, you could call yourself the Willows, or Noel could change his name to Paul, and we could call the group Peter, Paul, and Mary. And there's an old folk song that says, "I saw Peter, Paul, and Moses playing Ring Around the Roses, and I'll whoop the guy that says," so the alliteration was already there in our memories and in our DNA, so I said, well, I won't change my name, but I'll take it on as a middle name. Well, who knew we'd become so well known so fast that my middle name took over my name.
You know, so. so it wasn't your middle name?
No.
Just sort of took it on as a middle name?
Yeah. And still continue to. I mean, now I'm Noel Paul Stuckey on most of the press.
Was this Albert Grossman
who
came up with that?
Who later went on to manage Dylan and Jimi Hendrix and Janis and the band.
When he's the one who pulled you guys together, and Boston was kind of a part of that, right? Early on, you guys made your way up here to play a little bit, right?
One of our first real gigs was in the dead of winter, and the car failed halfway up from New York, and we played at the hotel. There was a jazz club in the basement of a hotel, and like Mary likes to tell the story, there were five people in the house. Two of them were waiters, and the other three were the Kingston Trio.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
They came to hear "Where Have All the Flowers Gone?" And then they turned it into a nice hit for themselves, and and in a sense, I think underscored the importance of Pete Seeger in a lot of the early folk music.
And you guys did a lot of Pete Seeger music.
Oh, for sure. Well, If I Had a Hammer, and then then sprinkled throughout our career, and our records.
How does that differ for you? I mean, in that movement which you were a part of, and folk music, you're recording other people's tunes, some people from other eras, like a Pete Seeger. You guys were friends with people like Bob Dylan, people like John Denver, who wrote songs that you guys recorded.
Yep. Dave Van Ronk.
Yeah. So how does it differ when you're sort of recording somebody else's song versus when you're writing your own stuff?
I think we pay equal attention to the integrity of the piece.
Yeah.
If we want to make a lyric change, which we did, I mean, even on Phil Oakes There But For Fortune, which is a well-known tune, we felt like it needed a bridge that addressed some of the more contemporary concerns. So we added a bridge. But I don't think anybody could quibble with how the trio handled their music, I know Dylan really liked the way we did Blowing in the Wind, and Don't Think Twice. Of course, we had to find that secret chord of Dylan's, in the Don't Think Twice changes. And, and it was mostly like what you're getting at, and I think we all understand is that those early years of folk music were really like family. You couldn't wait to hear somebody do your tune. I mean, that was the greatest honor of all.
Yeah. You guys were in Greenwich Village. What was the mood like there? What was the esprit de corps? I mean, was it?
Well, that was it.
Yeah.
You'd get through your gig, your performance, and you'd be out the door and down to the next coffee house to hear one of your friends doing something and trying to figure out the chord changes he was using, and where did he get that song? No kidding, he wrote it himself. I don't think singer-songwriter really happened, though, until Dylan began to play with the folk structures and the formats and began to substitute his own his own contemporary perspective and put that into folk format. That we all became aware of the fact of the power of folk music to not only entertain, but to inspire and inform, So folk music took a real turn. You and I were talking about that a little bit earlier. And, You know, a lot of people think folk music ended in the 60s, but but really, you know, its effect is still going on today. You know, you can trace it through Springsteen and Bono. You can, you know, it's in hip hop. It's in, you know, rap. It's even in country, the outspoken, you know, when you can sing about a mutual concern or a shared concern, social concern, then you're doing folk music. What did Louis Armstrong say? Hey, man, everything's folk music. You never heard a horse sing, did you?
It's pretty good Louis Armstrong you do.
Well, it's easy. I haven't had enough coffee this morning.
Yeah, there you go. I'm talking with Noel Stuckey, who is the Paul from Peter, Paul, and Mary, legendary folk group. You continue to write music, have continued to write music.
Yeah.
All these years.
Yeah. Well, we're not, I'm not in it. It's not like the Brill Building, you know, I'm not in it for the bucks. I'm in it when I see something that needs commenting and, or something that somebody else is not commenting on. And I either write it myself or I, you know, on the new album, I have two or three tunes from other people. It's, you know, it's more of a way of life than it is a career.
Yeah. So do you see, I mean, I know you were just sort of saying earlier that anytime somebody's seeing a concern, addressing a concern, and they're, you know, writing music, they're writing folk music. Certainly in your era, you were addressing major concerns. You were singing about major things that were going on in the world and at the same time going to number one on the charts with them.
That's because I think the whole phenomenon of folk music, the concept of being able to talk about something other than dating behavior, was pretty new to people.
Yeah.
You know, and that was pretty staggering. But yeah, and also, you know, you have to admit that the issues of the 60s were pretty clear cut. I mean, there was civil rights, there was the war in Vietnam, and while ecology and the environment were burgeoning concepts that we had to pay attention to, they didn't have half the press of the clear cut issues of the 60s. Then as the 70s and the 80s went on, you know, I think the fractional aspect of what it is we have to address, this is a very complicated age. I mean, I don't, you know, I don't feel that we have handed you, the younger generation, an easy planet to deal with. And part of that's been our fault. But part of the gift that we did pass on from people like Seeger and Cisco Houston and Josh White and is this ability to talk about it publicly in a public forum using music.
Do you sort of feel like there should be more of that than there is today, or do you feel
there's a ton of it?
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, no, it's all over the place. I mean, you were mentioning band names to me that I never heard, you know,
right?
Because I know that they're out there talking about it. Now, to a large extent, it still needs encouragement, though.
Yeah.
If you don't have the clear-cut issues, then you've got to have the platform where people are encouraged to take comments. I think what's missing, and what my daughter and I try to do through an organization called Music to Life, which encourages music of social change, is to provide open mic nights, to encourage club owners to invite in a lot of different genres to make comments on the times in which we live. I mean, what's the tune here? He said, blowing his own horn. Nah, it's not that kind of music, he said with a smile. More about the message and less about the style. Then he played a chord and each of us would try to learn a part. He brought us all together singing music from the heart. That's on the album. And
the new album, we should say. That's a new tune.
Yeah, called One in Many, and it's a song. I didn't know where it was going to go. A lot of songwriters will tell you that. You know, they start off, they got an idea in mind, but it ended up being about Pete, pretty much, Seeger, and how he brought us all together, singing music from the heart.
What's your relationship like with him?
And with Pete?
How has it been through the years? Yeah, I mean...
Oh, affable, concerned. I would say Pete You know, he's kind of a combination cheerleader coach,
yeah,
and the head engineer of this train called Folk Music right now. Mm. And I saw him about a month and a half ago, but, you know, you see him on YouTube all the time.
Totally.
Down at, you know, Occupy Columbus Circle in New York City.
Yep.
He's, and yet, the thing I love about Pete is his sense of a balanced life. You know, a lot of people say, what's he doing living in the boonies up there? You know, I mean, he's a Grammy winner. Why isn't he? Well, because that's part of the integrity of the human being. You know, he's got a concern for the, you know, for the Hudson and mm-hmm. the whole Clearwater revival. And, you know, he still chops his own firewood and carries it into the house.
I mean, so cool.
I think there are a lot of lessons we all could learn from that. You know, yeah. We're so busy texting and checking our email and, you know, having relationships with maybe 1,000 people that we really would better call acquaintances than friends. And maybe we should take a lesson from Pete and just kind of boil it down to the people right around us, you know, and be concerned about the town in which we live and those issues that we face as neighbors.
Talking with Noel Paul Stuckey of songwriting, song performing fame, member of Peter, Paul, and Mary, the famed folk group, stayed together through the 60s. You know, it's funny, you guys followed about the same timing as the Beatles did, right? You got together in about 62.
We were together in, 60.
Yeah.
And then made our first record in 61. And like I said, you know, it was a pretty sudden rise.
Yeah.
Lemon Tree, and then If I Had a Hammer, mm-hmm. and then a couple of Dylan tunes, Rolling in the Wind, and Don't Think Twice. So when the Beatles arrived in about 63, 64, they were bringing, it was called the British Invasion. They were the head of the British invasion.
That's right.
Know? And I was totally knocked out by the music, the chord changes, the audacity, the energy, and still am. You know, I still love to listen to Beatles music.
What were you listening to early? Like, you know, just in your formative years, listening to music?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day, knowing that I was going to come down here and somebody once again was going to say, what are your roots, you know?
Yeah.
And I was a latecomer to folk music. I mean, it was really Peter and Mary who knew folk music in and out. They were the weavers, aficionados. They were the ones that went to the Carnegie Hall concert, the reunion concert. Me, I was into jazz and doo-wop. I mean, I was a huge Dave Brubeck fan.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, parenthetically, I got to tell you, was a great thrill to go on the road with the trio and Dave Brubeck.
When did you guys
do gigs
that?
Together?
When did that happen?
I think that was in the 80s.
Jeez.
Oh, man, it was wonderful. And we even sang a song together and was recorded on a Brubeck album. I was sad to hear that he passed away recently. Yeah. You know, what a giant of music he was. So many different things, everything from the composition of you know, of masses and choral pieces mm-hmm. to this incredible relationship he had with Paul Desmond, the sax player in there. And I think, to a large extent, learning to group sing is learning to be, how do you say, acquiescent, learning to be receptive.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and sensitive. You know, if another person is singing a little louder than you, maybe you should sing a little softer, or maybe you should sing a little louder right with them.
Yeah.
And we used to do a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like Mary used to liken it to trapeze, you know, being on a trapeze.
Yeah.
You just knew where the other person was.
Yeah.
And the most exciting nights were the ones where you made those moves together and yet you'd never rehearsed them that way.
Totally.
Yeah.
Do you miss that?
You're talking like you were in a band.
I've played in we weren't as popular as Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Well, that would be
except
hard
for
to
with
do.
My mother.
Times
I think my mother.
Then. Your mother liked you.
My mother liked us, yeah. I'm talking with Noel Paul Stuckey, member of Peter, Paul, and Mary, folk musician, activist. You know, one thing I'm interested in is you guys have such a legacy that your things, your music, it comes up still today. And I'm curious what that's like for you. I mean, two instances that I think of are, you know, in a recent episode of a very popular show, Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of your tunes, I think from your first record, and I think a song that you wrote, Early in the Morning.
Oh yeah,
it comes up, and interestingly, it's a character played by Tom Hanks' son, Colin Hanks, who's a priest, and he plays it at the end of the episode. Actually, we have a little bit. Let's hear a little bit of the song, if we could, Chelsea.
Mm-hmm. ask the Lord, help me find the way. Help me find the way.
Help me find the way
to the promised land.
The promised land.
So, do they contact you when they want to use this?
Yeah.
Do you, and what's it like for you to sort of to see that, to have your music being sort of used in this way?
I think, you know, the whole concept of using music as an adjunct to a visual is really kind of a new phenomenon for anybody who writes a song, because, you know, they had one image in mind and here it is being applied, you know, to create a sympathy or to create a kind of an emotional charge. I mean, the number of times the wedding song has been used in television shows from, you know, the Wonder Years to more recently, is there a program called Mike and Molly or something?
Yeah, a new program called Mike and Molly. Yeah.
They've just contacting us.
Yeah, there's a little of the wedding song coming up under us right there. This was your biggest solo hit, right? This was after.
Yeah.
Can you tell the story a little bit about how this song came about?
Yeah, sure. I don't think it's any question anymore that the song was prayed for. You know, Peter had asked me to bless his wedding with a song, and I felt like that guy in the Woody Allen film who hands the bank teller note says, I don't have a gun, but I know where I can get one, because I knew I didn't have the authority to dispense blessings, but I knew where I could get one. So that's why my name doesn't appear on it. It's why all the proceeds went to the Public Domain Foundation, and why even to this day, you know, we're handing out almost $2 million now, have been, to charitable organizations, and including supporting Music to Life. It was a great honor to be, and I had no idea that this song translated to so many other couples. You know, I thought it was just for Peter.
Just
and his
for your buddy.
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's cool. Maybe one of the reasons he turned to you is, I mean, you talk about, I've heard you talk about in interviews, read about a profound spiritual experience in the late 60s. Was that something that immediately changed your life? Was it something that had kind of always been there and then just opened up? What was
it? Well, I don't, you know, it's very curious. You hear other people talking about it. Mary was doing an interview with Bob Dylan, to mention his name again, and she said something about Paul has gotten very spiritual, and Dylan said he's always been spiritual.
Yeah.
And that really surprised me, because I hadn't really thought about it. But I guess, you know, once you understand that the concept of G-O-D is really difficult for people to handle when it's got a label on it.
Yeah.
But if you're full of L-O-V-E, they get it, because they can see it in your life and they can see it in the way that you relate to other people, and they start looking for it in their own lives. And that's a capital L-O-V-E. So to the extent that, you know, I guess I had spirit in my life all along, I think my mom and dad really brought me up to value that aspect, and that's the trump card, you know, that no matter what your relationship is, you come down on the side of compassion and love. So it's, I think you're right. The spiritual profound moment that happened in the late 60s was really a turnaround for me and a lifestyle.
Yeah.
But what it did was tap into a heartfelt commitment that had probably always been there. I mean, listen to songs that the trio did called Hymn. You know, I visited some houses where they said that you were living. They talked a lot about you and they spoke about your giving. They passed a basket with some envelopes. I just had time to write a note and all it said was, I believe in you. So somewhere deep in there was buried a conviction that love is going to save the world.
All right, we're almost out of time here. You're living in Maine now?
I am.
You have been for some time?
Right on the coast of Blue Hill. Yeah.
You're going to keep making music?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll go. As a matter of fact, I'll take one out. We live in the same house on different floors. And I got my window, and you got yours. We each got a door that leads to the hall. But the rooms are so cozy, and the door is so small. Here we go. One flame, many candles. One sky, many stars. One sea, many rivers, one love, and so many hearts.
That is Noel Paul Stuckey from Peter, Paul, and Mary, and he's been our guest here on Boston Public Radio. That's going to do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow with more Boston Public Radio. For Callie Crossley, I am Edgar B. Herwick III. Have a great afternoon.